Hello, you're listening to Drawn to the Flame, a podcast for fans of Arkham Horror the card game. We're sometimes fortnightly, we're sometimes monthly. I'm your host, Frank, and today I'm joined by...
It's me, Peter. Hello, Frank.
Hi, Peter. How are you doing?
Doing really well. Looking forward to the final part of our first part of First Looks.
The end of, part one.
The end of the beginning, not... Yeah. That's right.
Not the end of the end. Exactly. As the astute listener will have worked out, we've been working through the level zero cards of the Feast of Hemlock Vale Investigator expansion for players, and we have a handful of level zero cards left, those belonging to neutral, which isn't a class, it's just neutral. So we're going to do those, yeah. And I suppose the astute listener will also hear, probably won't hear, but we're recording at a bit of a weird time, which means it can be a chaos episode. Which I like.
Oh, yes. Anything's possible.
Anything's possible. Well, if we were Three Bean Salad, we'd then spend the next 40 minutes getting chaotic and not actually doing our episode, but we're not. Cool. So, yeah, we're going to dive in and take a look at these neutral cards. Is there anything you're... Neutral's so weird in the new big box design, isn't it? I was going to say, is there anything you're hoping for or feel would be useful to have in neutral, given what we've seen across the classes?
A good question. Let's consider briefly the neutral cards we had back in Scarlet Keys.
Mm.
Can you remember what we had in there?
We had the, I was going to say Transmogrifier, but it's not that. It's the Hyperphysical Shotcaster.
Yeah, that's right.
Which obviously was a customizable card carrying on the customizable theme.
Mm-hmm.
Did we have... Oh, and we must have had Refine as well.
Yeah, that's right.
The double that allows you to boost a customizable. I've just had a look. We got Tool Belt as well.
That's right, yeah, which is interesting because you'd almost think that fits better in... We used to have this thing where a couple of... You'd get a little preview at the end of a cycle. Do you remember this? When we had Occult Lexicon and Hallowed Mirror showing up at the end of one cycle to preview Bonded in the next cycle. So exactly. Tool Belt feels like a little preview for this cycle coming. There was also Soul Sanctification there as well.
Oh, wow, yeah. Yeah, that kind of... What's the point of healing? It's like, turn your healing into boosts.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I was just asking because I was wondering whether the neutral cards sort of gave a hint as to what would be coming in that cycle. Or they played into some themes that were explored in the class cards.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Are they... So, like... Well, Tool Belt is an interesting one, actually, in Scarlet Keys because, of course, Kaimani could take tools 0-4.
Yes.
I would love to get Duke on the cast and pick his brain about how many of the tool designs and like were Kaimani and Wilson maybe designed alongside each other and then separated out. You know, Maxine has said to us in the past that historically some cards just can't fit in a box and they get put to one side and then might be, you know, brought back later on and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It feels particularly with tool, we've had a couple of cycles that have sort of slowly been fleshing out that design. And in Edge of the Earth, if we go back even further, can you remember the neutral cards there?
Sled Dog, Heavy Furs.
Correct. Yeah, in the thick of it.
Was Rod of Animalism in there as well?
Well, I think you're looking at... Are you looking at a list?
I'm not. No. I'm back in the page for... there might have been... Impressive. Was there one more?
Yeah, there was Call for Backup as well.
Oh, yes, of
the
course.
Synergy card, which I think just fits with your
theory.
Feeling about... Yeah.
The negation. So, I mean, what I was going to say then is I expect some cards, and I know we've got a couple of cards, one that supports Bless and Curse.
Yeah.
At a guess, maybe a neutral double.
Yeah.
Seeing as we've seen one for every faction.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually, yeah.
Oh, actually, I know
and
this
I've,
one.
Because we know all of these cards.
Yeah.
How long can we keep this going?
I've remembered that I remembered the card.
Okay.
Which is a weird way of saying it. What I meant to say was... I know there's a card.
I'm not looking at it now.
I'm not looking at it, but I remember there's a card because I was going to deck build with it.
And of course, Parlay is the other thing I have mentioned on a previous episode, some of the Parlay supports. So let's see that as well. Do you want to go first or second in the reading?
So I'll go first. We have got a neutral asset. Yes. Eldritch Tongue. Mm-hmm. It's a 2-cost asset. It has a willpower icon and it has the ritual trait. Uses 4 charges. You may play events with Parlay from your discard pile as if they were in your hand. As an additional cost to play an event this way, spend 1 charge from Eldritch Tongue. After that event resolves, remove it from the game.
Mm-hmm. takes up the arcane slot.
Takes up the arcane slot, indeed, yes. I like how this is an asset which is a tongue. Tongue of the light, yeah, kind of thing.
Yeah.
What do you think, though?
My glib response is stop trying to make parlay happen. But I guess it's not really a response to this card. It's a bit like Tomes and Daisy, right? It's parlay and Alessandra.
Mm-hmm.
Have we seen enough parlay, and has it forced its way into the game in enough of an archetype that every investigator, or certainly an investigator from every class, wants access to a card like this?
The question...
Yeah, go on.
The question I've got is, how many parlays would you have to run for this to be worthwhile? And it's a question we return to for cards like Fence, Daisy, and, I don't know, Research Librarian or Abigail Foreman, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Wit and Green. Does Wit and Green do books as well?
Wit and Green looks for tones, yeah.
So, like, we often say there's actually not that many before it becomes worthwhile, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So this... I don't know. Like, I don't think you need to have that many parlay events. Maybe 6 good parlay events.
Mm.
That this then becomes worth it.
4 plus, right? Because if you're going to use all the charges of this on your 3 parlay events, you're paying 2 to replay 3 cards. And then they've been removed from the game. So the last charge is a dud. So yeah, 6 cards. If your event suite is turning into a parlay event suite, then sure, it's worth consideration, I suppose. There's something floating around here as well around Crystallizer for me, that most parlay cards, most not all, are events. And you can be playing the parlay, attaching them to Crystallizer, then committing them to a future test, and they end up in your discard pile. And then using Eldritch Tongue and removing them from the game and just like getting triple duty out of these cards.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's definitely a possibility there. So in Alessandra, I think I would definitely be looking at one of these because I'm going to stuff my deck with parlay, and I'm using this almost as a panic button for when I really need to use a parlay that's ended up in my discard pile again.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking back into some of the cards we've seen. There's some really powerful ones we saw previewed Stir the Pot level 5. So you could parlay, pick an enemy at your location, do X damage to each enemy at your location. That then... ends up in the discard pile, and then just do it again with Eldritch Tongue.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Do that twice. Like something like that seems very powerful. And yeah, I guess if you need Vamp to be doing things for you.
I almost don't like removing it from the game once it resolves, because it prevents my ability to play it again. Say if you loop your deck and draw back into it, or you have some other form of recursion.
Yeah.
I mean, I appreciate that. Like, how many times do you really play an event more than once from the discard? How many times do you recur it more than once? And, like, in some decks, it's a lot. Like, if...
Yeah.
In Patrice, maybe a lot more. In Patrice, I'd be a lot more. If you were doing some kind of parlay, Patrice, would maybe feel a bit more hesitant to run this? Because there's other ways of getting those events back.
Yeah, you just get it back. We've seen a lot of parlay arrive in Rogue, understandably, because of Alessandra. And I would consider Rogue to be up there competing for card draw. They're not as strong as Seeker, but they're up there, probably second place, I would say. Thinking of Lucky Cigarette Case, thinking of probably my favourite Rogue card all in. And you can draw for days in certain Rogues. There's a really good deck on Arkham DB by Amber Autumn at the moment, her Winnie deck, which is like you loop your deck every turn or every 2 turns. In that situation, like, yeah, there'd be an expectation that you play these events multiple times. And I think I'd really like to create a really draw-heavy Alessandra deck, at which point I completely agree with you. You're kind of hampering your long-term gains playing Eldritch Tongue by removing these key events. Unless you want it as deck thinning, unless there's certain parlays that you've put in twice.
You've put in bad. Yeah.
Not bad, but, you know, you just...
I need to get rid of these parlay events I've packed my deck with so I can draw my good cards.
Potentially. So yeah, I guess, yeah, we should maybe move on.
Yeah, let's move on. Yeah. Here's with the next one, Frank.
So next we have Bide Your Time. This is a 0-cost event, willpower icon. It is a double.
There we go. Yes.
As an additional cost to play Bide Your Time, spend an action. During your next turn, you may take 2 additional actions. It's 12:30 and you're starting to wonder if the whole thing's a ruse. So you're going to bide your time. Okay.
Yeah, what do you think of this, Frank?
I feel like you're going to talk about biotic labour.
That's true of any time, though. You can say that whenever. Yeah. It would be true.
You might be about to ring the biotic labour bell.
I don't mind this, I don't think. Now, okay, so the issue I have, the obvious use case that jumps to mind to me for bide your time is when a character doesn't have anything they can meaningfully be doing to progress the scenario. And an example would be, you've got a big enemy. Mm-hmm. No, sorry. It doesn't have anything to do. Yes, that's right. It doesn't have anything to do that turn, but there will be something to do in a subsequent turn. Yeah. What I was going to say was, if you're a fighter and there isn't an enemy out, but you know a fighter might appear, or you're kind of coming up to the end of an agenda, or you're going to do a dig into the encounter deck or something like that, or there's a hunter enemy going to move into your location.
Yeah, or the cluer needs two more clues and then you can advance. And they're not going to get them first action.
Yeah.
They need to move. They want to play a card. They're going to get them last action. You're not going to advance yet. So the fighter's like, oh, well, I don't have anything to do this turn. I'll be ready to fight the big enemy next turn. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
So you could play this and then you can shift those actions into the next turn. I would say it fills a role which is very similar to Task Force for that character. Because what it does is it gives you the actions next turn rather than gives those actions to someone who can usefully spend them now. And Task Force has got a kind of good trade up. You essentially get an extra action, don't you? Because you get a move, an activate, and a clue. And this is just two actions. I sort of feel in the situation where bide your time might be useful. I don't think I've explained this with crystal clarity, but hopefully you kind of got the vibe of what I'm going for. I think most situations you'd want to play bide your time, probably you could use Task Force. There might be like you're gearing up to fight a big enemy and you want the bide your time so you can like move, fight next turn rather than move, fight this turn, get hit and then fight next turn.
Yeah. So, it could be more proactive than just, I think there's a big enemy coming. Like you say, it could be, okay, this enemy is going to take 4 or 5 actions to take down.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd rather not take 2 of those actions this turn so that I can take a lot of them together next turn.
Yeah. You could have there's a number of situations I can see it being useful. Like if you've got a hunter enemy and you're Daniela.
Yeah.
You might be like, cool, well, I'll take the hit this turn because then I can deal a damage back, or I can, well, no point auto-evading the enemy at that point, but you can deal the damage back and the next turn you've got a whole turn then to wail on the enemy.
Yeah.
With the extra damage, of course. I don't know, there's a few situations where I can see it would be useful. I tend to think something like Task Force would probably be more useful, or as useful in those situations.
Mm.
If this drew a card, I think that would be really nice.
Yeah, that's the penalty of this, that you're actually spending a card and 2 actions to have 2 actions the following turn.
Yeah.
If it was a card that gave you 2 actions delayed, fine, but it's the 2 action cost to get the 2 actions that means it's basically you're down a card. So it's about finding those nooks and crannies where switching your actions around really matters.
Yeah.
And where that's really helpful. I think you've described it well about all the different possible places. I guess other thing to bear in mind for this in Rogue is that Rogue does have some cards that either let them spend actions or reward them for the number of actions they take in a turn. I'm thinking of Payday or the Typewriter. They've even got Double-Double.
Yeah.
So you could Double-Double this.
You
spend 3 actions because you have to pay the additional cost twice, right? Or is Double-Double no other costs? Anyway, I think you get 4 actions the following turn, if I've got that right. I'm not quite sure how much you pay to do that, but yeah. So you can warp the fabric of time and have these very uneven shaped turns. It's not 3 actions plodding along.
Yeah, yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. I think probably this is a card also that just rewards scenario knowledge very well. I imagine there are probably actually quite a few situations where I might want to play this, and I just, because it's not existed as an even idea that you could bank actions and have them later on, it's not been something I've thought about too much. Like, I'm just thinking of that as well. Say you're playing Amanda, and sometimes as Amanda, you slot a card under her, but it's not an amazing turn for whatever card you've slotted.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe you get a couple of clues or whatever it is, but your plan is next turn to slot that perception level 2 and draw a boatload of cards, or the plan is next turn, I don't know, if you're doing that fighter Amanda and you're going to slot Vicious Blow. And what you'd really like is a longer turn when you've got the really powerful card slotted, or I don't know, your Essence of the Dream, your stats are going to be crazy high. And then the previous turn, you kind of could take or leave, particularly late in the scenario. So, yeah, I think that's probably worth thinking about. Any investigator who has like a power turn or a spike in power, this is about, even Susie, right? It's about making the most of it when you have that spike in power.
Yeah, yeah, I can see all this. Potentially, I think the solo use case is better. Task Force swaps actions between investigators, which is obviously a better multiplayer. The thing we didn't say when we talked about Task Force is it probably loses a lot of value in solo, doesn't it?
Yeah, the challenge is having something to activate, really, depending on who you're playing. I'd almost say it's basically like playing Working a Hunch. You get a move, you get an activate, and then it's 2 cost and no action.
But you have to do all of those in order to get value from it. So you're probably better off playing like Galvanize or something.
Is it too obvious to say that Bide Your Time is worth a consideration if you're running doubles? Because one of the pressure points of running a double is it's 2/3 of your turn.
Mm.
But if you then have a turn that's actually a 5-action turn, makes it slightly less awkward if you needed to say move twice and then play a double, or play a card, move, then play a double. Again, like giving yourself that chance to have a bit more flexibility, maybe?
Maybe. I'm not a big fan of that, Frank. I'm just going to shoot you down.
Why not?
I don't know. It smacks of some kind of false economy, though I can't put my finger on exactly how.
Mm-hmm. I guess it's one where we need to play more doubles and see actually how able we are to fit them or not.
Yeah.
My hunch is sparing 2/3 of your turn to play a double is awkward.
Yeah. But then do you want to do
the right conditions
twice?
Yeah.
But the 2 actions you used to play Bide Your Time, you could have just used to play.
Just used to play the double.
Yeah. If you can play Bide Your Time, you could have played the double you're thinking of playing. And all of those doubles. The only thing would be if you had some scenario knowledge and you could think to yourself, next turn I'll need to use, I don't know, Task Force.
Elaborate distraction. Yeah. Like that's the example, right? You've got, you're waiting for the big blob of enemies to be close enough to play Elaborate Distraction, but it's their one turn away.
Yeah.
So you're sort of like, that's really what you're doing. It doesn't actually make the double easier. It, Bide Your Time is saying, if you're using it to play another double, you're saying, I commit to playing another double next turn.
Yeah.
Okay.
Should we move on?
Curious. Yeah.
Next, we have Well Dressed. This is a neutral skill card, and it's 0 XP as well. It has practiced and fortune traits. While Well Dressed is committed to a skill test... Oh, sorry, it's got a single wild icon. While Well Dressed is committed to a skill test during a parlay action, it gains 3 wild icons. The fine clothes do all the talking.
Do you think this is actually well-dressed, like blessed and cursed?
and if so,
why has it not got the dressed trait? Practiced. Okay. A worse unexpected courage until you parlay, and then it's a double unexpected courage.
Yeah. It's interesting, this one.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a good feel for how many parlay events a parlay heavy investigator is going to use. I would say... Mm-hmm. Almost certainly outside of that investigator, it's not very good.
Yeah.
So it's limited to times when you might want to parlay a lot. So you're about to play the last king.
Mm, yeah.
Or you're making a lot of use of parlay events. I don't know. I think I just put better cards, skill cards. I just put Unexpected Courage in that deck and just accept the fact that Do you use Unexpected Courage doing the things your deck has been built to do? Frank.
Yeah, you're using Unexpected Courage as your Mythos protection or your landing your key thing.
Yes.
Rather than necessarily being like, I have built my deck to
I'm Roland. Fight. I'm about to do a fight test, so I'm going to put unexpected courage in. Usually you're not in that position. You might be, but not that often. Which makes me think this doesn't really... In a parlay heavy deck, I mean, parlay is different because parlay is a really broad term.
Yeah.
You might, if you're playing Alessandra, you've got quite a flat stat line as well.
And you might be running all of these weird parlays that ask for all of your stats exactly. or three of your four stats. Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I don't think that updates my assessment of the card. I think it maybe fits in a parlay heavy investigator.
I think there is an encounter deck angle on this one that obviously, like you said, Last King, there are certain scenarios that do ask for parlay. So I've done a quick Arkham DB search, and of course, getting Lita Chantler under your control is a parlay intellect 4.
Yeah.
So starting the game, parlaying Jazz Mulligan is a parlay intellect 3. Parlaying Francis Morgan or Peter Clover is a willpower 3 action.
Hmm.
And this is sort of early in the game. And then you've obviously got those tests at the start of, in Last King as well, at the start of Carcosa.
So this could go on your deck for the first couple of scenarios of those campaigns and then get upgraded into something else.
Yeah, point. Even in TCU, there's Joseph Meiger to parlay with and the Lodge Neophytes to parlay with. Like, there are parlays that are tests. It's just how many of them there are.
Vanishing of Lynn Harper, is that parlays as well?
Yeah.
Potentially we'll see parlays.
Yeah, not all of them are tests, though. So, like, Brian Burnham is just discard cards with matching icons, whereas Joyce Little is willpower 3 action. Othera Gilman is just spend resources. So, it's this weird thing where if every encounter deck parlay was a test, I would be much more curious about this. But I feel like passing those tests, you probably have other ways to pass them.
Yeah.
And... yeah, it's quite a spike as well. Like, plus 4 to a parlay test is something. But, yeah.
I don't think I've got much more else to add. We can move on if you want.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say, like, on Eldritch Tongue and on Well Dressed, if you're building a parlay deck, so whether that's Alessandra or wanting to use lots of the new parlay cards, you're probably running Fine Clothes. You're probably running Well Dressed. And then you're maybe thinking about Eldritch Tongue, depending on how much draw you have in your deck.
I tell you what, I sort of feel like Well Dressed and Fine Clothes is too many slots. Yeah, it's almost literally a hat on a hat. So potentially you just run Fine Clothes in that matchup. But I'm aware there'll be quite a number of people who don't have Fine Clothes. In an ideal world, Fine Clothes would have been reprinted. Or, you know, it would be in the core set, it would be reprinted in this set, it will be somehow more easily available to people. Mm. But it's not. It's in Dunwich, is it?
Yeah, where Doom awaits.
So, a kind of neutral enabler card for parlay style, locked into a different cycle, doesn't feel great. So, I sort of feel, I mean, it references Fine Clothes on the card, and basically in the title of the card as well.
Yeah.
So, if it's just a, here's a card that is similar to Fine Clothes, but is available to Alessandra for people who've just bought this box, like, I think that is okay.
Mm-hmm.
Am I making sense?
Yeah, you are. And it's, the reference is so obvious if you know Fine Clothes, that it's, maybe it's just saying, like, hey, you don't need both, sort of thing.
Yeah.
Fine Clothes is every parlay action is -2 difficulty.
Yeah.
And this is obviously not everyone because you have to commit this, but it's +4 for a couple until you loop your deck.
Yeah.
So I guess they're doing slightly different things. One is sort of smoothing out the difficulty, the other is giving you a big spike. But they're serving the same function overall, aren't they? Helping you pass parlay tests. I might run both and see what happens.
Fine. Don't let me stop you.
And that's it. We're done. That's all of the level 0 neutral cards. Thank you for that respectful chuckle at the joke I already told you I would tell.
Yeah.
But shall we carry on and do XP cards as well?
Yeah, let's. You first, cool. I think.
So next we have Dawn Star. This is a 1-cost, 1 XP event. It has a wild icon as well. We're hitting these wild icons hard. That's 3 cards in a row with wild icons. Ritual and Blessed. It's says fast, play after revealing chaos tokens during a skill test at your location. Okay, it doesn't have to be you though. Ignore the modifiers of each curse token revealed during this test. For each curse token ignored, deal one damage to an enemy at your location. Only the strongest spirit can sunder the dark. And it looks like it's a catchy sundering the dark.
Yeah, Dawnstar, I mean, Lucifer is Touchstone here, the Morning Star, right?
Mm-hmm.
Also, I think there's a D&D sword called Dawnstar, I think.
Okay.
I think it's really good against vampires.
Is what? Lucifer is the Morning Star?
Yeah, isn't that right?
I didn't know that. I guess Bringer of Light, right? Carrier of...
Is that Lucifer? Is that what that literally means?
Yeah.
The name based on the Latin name for the Morning Star. It appeared in the King James version of the Bible in Isaiah and before that in the Vulgate, which of course, as you know, is the late 4th century Latin translation of the Bible.
The Vulgate.
Not as the name of a devil, but as the Latin word Lucifer, uncapitalized, meaning Morning Star, the planet Venus, or as an adjective, light bringing. It's a translation of the Hebrew word, looks like Hillel, meaning shining one. Oh, I think it's Venus, isn't it? The Dawn Star.
Morning Star.
Well, there we go.
Okay. How does this inform our assessment of this card?
Well, is it good, Frank?
Yeah, this card is a curse protection.
You're about to say something. I think you're about to say what I'm about to say. So I'll let you go.
Okay, I'm going to say that paying one to save you on that test that curses is tanking you, I don't think is bad.
That wasn't what I was going to say. What I was going to say was that it's a card which cares about revealing chaos curse tokens, but has the blessed trait.
Yeah, upside downy. There are situations where you end up with a lot of curses, even in blessed decks. You could be doing something like Rite of Equilibrium, my favourite Bless and Curse card. You could be Sister Mary and being forced to replace a load of blesses with curses in the bag. There are obviously curse weaknesses as well, like Dread Curse and Accursed Follower, that pump curses into the bag.
Yeah.
If you're aware that you're in a curse-heavy situation, for some reason, maybe it's your weakness, paying 1 XP for this is not the end of the world. I guess what this also offers is reveal 5 curses, deal 5 damage for the low, low price of 1 resource, 1 XP in a card.
Yeah.
How likely is that, though?
Distributed, as you wish amongst enemies of your location.
Yeah.
So dealing with elusive and aloof enemies.
And I was going to say this is in the class that can do that. I mean, it has a catcher in the art, but this is a neutral card. But if we're thinking about Mystic, you're thinking about things like Olive McBride and drawing multiple tokens, Jacqueline Fine drawing multiple tokens. Maybe you're even doing some kind of weird, what's the card called where you reveal 5 tokens and pick the...
Dark Prophecy.
Oh, Dark Prophecy, yeah.
It's got like the Cat's Cradle on the art.
Exactly, yeah. Reveal 5 tokens instead of 1. Choose one of them with a symbol, but not a curse, and ignore the rest. And if none of those tokens are revealed, choose any one of the other ones to resolve and ignore the rest. That doesn't help with this, because obviously if you've ignored the rest... they've gone and you don't get to... Dark Prophecy has been tabooed to now read a non-Elder Sign symbol.
Oh, there we go.
What I'm trying to say is in Mystic, there could be times where you say, I'm gonna get a nice handful of tokens out of the bag. I'm going to hope for a load of curses and sort of spray damage out. And that's no bad thing.
Yeah.
Do you like this card as a curse protection card? Where are you at with it?
I don't mind it like that, actually. I think I really like it's you play it after revealing the case tokens. I think that's really nice.
Because
I think we've all had those situations where the bag's full of chaos full of curse tokens, and you're like, I still need to force through this test, and I don't have some of the tech on hand to get me through. I think there's also just, it's nice just to be able to have some direct damage. And if you've got bag manipulation, you can be like, okay, cool, I've got an enemy at my location or whatever. I can fiddle things to do 2 damage to it and kill it.
Yeah.
Fast, which is really nice. Like, you know, imagine you're in the situation where you've got, is it called Apocalypse?
Yep. No, Armageddon.
Armageddon. Damn it. just made that mistake. And that does, is it an extra damage or a charge for every curse token? I think the upgraded one is
the leveled
every,
up one. Yeah.
So, you know, you go from use that, manipulate things to get two curses. So you're dealing
two, six damage.
Two extra damage and then two more damage with this. So that's five damage, I think. Yeah.
Six damage because it's a two damage attack as well.
Oh, is it? Oh, geez, oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go. Six damage for one action. If with a bit of curse bag manipulation. You know, I'm just I'm doing what I hate doing, which is best casing something. But alongside that kind of build that can do that, Dawnstar seems really nice. And it's reactive as well, so you don't spend the card until you know that you're gonna have the effect.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it also pulls duty, double duty, as, you know, I haven't got my other anti-curse tech online, I've got this to help me.
Yeah. I just need to get this one clue. I'll investigate here. Oh my goodness, three curses. I'm screwed. Oh wait, no, it's fine. I'll just cancel those curses.
Yeah.
Cancel them.
It's a shame it's after revealing chaos tokens. Will this work for anyone's test?
Yeah.
That's nice as well. It's nice. I'm gonna go on the record, Frank. I'm gonna go on the record and say I think this is nice.
Did you lean towards the mic to say that as well?
Yeah, just so it's fully on the record.
It's nice. Yeah. Shall I put a little echo on that as well, just so people hear it? I'd agree, actually, when you just said that as well, you might be the mystic who can pull all the curses, but you might just have this sitting in hand, and alas, your rogue goes for their big attack that is, you know, going to be, you know, double or nothing backstab back in the days when you could double or nothing backstab, and then they pull curse. -3 You're saving them from that, those two curses, and that being a -7 attack, and -7 value, and you're chucking in a couple more damage for them, which is great. Yeah, does really it, nice.
I'll tell you who else. Does Diane ignore? She gets cards when she ignores tokens, right? Is that
just ignores or cancels when one of her cards ignores or cancels?
There's an ignore as well.
Slot it under Diana Stanley.
Curse Diana deck.
Cool.
Nice.
Cool little card. Yeah.
I like that a lot. I like that a lot more than I thought I would. Should I do the next one?
Let's do it.
This is Occult Reliquary. Reliquary? How would you say that?
Reliquary.
Reliquary. Like that.
It's a weird word, isn't it? Reliquary.
Reliquary. It's one of those words where, is there a name reliquary. For a word where a bit of it is like another word, like relic?
Yeah.
But you might not necessarily pronounce it like you pronounce that word. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's like reliquary. Yeah. And you wouldn't say relique.
Yeah.
I know what you mean.
Anyway, Occult Reliquary. Dubious Source is the subtitle. This is a blank cost 3 XP asset, and it has the Boon and the Pact traits. Permanent, limit 1 per deck. You have one additional hand, accessory, or arcane slot, which can only be used to hold a blessed or accursed asset. The price is but a pittance for what you will gain. I find it weird there's a guy on this.
Mm.
Is he looking after it for you?
Yeah, and that we're making this pact. I think of pacts as quite scary cards that like have a downside. And I only see upside, Peter.
Yeah, extra slots, mate.
Yeah, so we touched on this in our Guardian first look episode of all things, or certainly in our Mystic episode.
We talked about this, I think, on the phone, because I was thinking about that Blessed Zoe deck.
Mm.
And I will say to the listeners what I said to you at that point, Frank, which I think I like this because Blessed cards could be quite varied in slots. Having a flexible card that can offer a slot to a wide number of other cards feels really decent. So Blessed Zoe, as an example, could play this. And then she has, depending on what order her cards come into her hand, she can hold an extra weapon if she gets her Blessed Blade down, or she has the Holy Spear. That's two hand slots, isn't it? And then she's still got a hand slot. Or if she's playing Ancestral Token, she can play that and her cross at the same time.
Yeah.
And it's 3
or
XP.
Her Hallowed Mirror and her cross if she's playing Hallowed Mirror. Yeah,
absolutely, yeah. So you could spend 3 XP getting a Relic Hunter. You could spend, you know, 2 XP getting one copy of Bantaleer level 2. and then try and draw it before you need it, or you can spend 3 XP and replicate the effects of both of those cards. Not at the same time. Mm. There's nothing to stop you buying a Relic Hunter down the line. Then you still get the extra slot from this. Just, I think that's nice. I think it's a really nice option. And I think for a traits, two traits, that can be quite varied in terms of what they require from the user, having a flexible card like this is pretty good.
The other thing I'd throw out with this as well is that not all blessed and cursed cards deal with bless and curse. And the reason I mention that is that there are other blessed and cursed cards out there that you might not run because of the slots, but actually this opens up a little space for them potentially if you're happy to run it. So like, not saying this is necessarily the card that would answer this, but Decorated Skull, the spooky skull, is cursed.
Yeah.
It's got nothing to do with curse, and it normally doesn't get run, I would say, because of Lucky Cigarette Case. And you're probably, you know, if you're going to take a Relic Hunter, you're going to run 2 Lucky Cigarette Case then. You're not going to run Decorated Skull. But there's like a weird use case here where you spot, oh, hang on, like I said already, Hallowed Mirror is blessed. It has nothing to do with bless, but it's blessed.
Yeah.
So, yeah, great that you've just gained yourself an accessory slot from this.
Yeah.
I really like this. Yeah, I really like it too. I like it for all the reasons you said as well. And I think, you know, the other place to be aware of this is that Arcane slot as well.
Mm-hmm.
In Mystic, if you're running the Cursed Spell Suite, maybe you're running some of the Cursed Spells and some non-Cursed Spells, and just getting the extra Arcane slot that could also be an accessory slot. There's definitely going to be a deck out there that's using this, using Mystic Tarot to have, like, I don't know, 5 accessory slots if it wants it, because of the way that those cards interact. So, yeah, it's cool. It's a decent card.
Nice. Okay, cool. Should we go on to the last one?
Yes.
Hit me, Frank.
We have, well, a 5 XP neutral card. We know that these can sometimes be very powerful. This is a unique card, the Broken Diadem, Crown of Dying Light. 1 cost, 5 XP, Wild Icon again. Item, Charm, and Mask. Limit 1 per deck, limit 1 mask per investigator. Reaction. After a skill test at your location ends, in which both Bless and Curse token were revealed, place 1 resource on this card as an offering. Then, if there are 3 offerings on this card, search your bonded cards for Twilight Diadem and swap it with this card, moving all offerings from this card to Twilight Diadem. What? This is cool.
So do we want to...
Should I go straight on?
Yeah.
So the Twilight Diadem is also subtitled The Crown of Dying Light. It's null costed. Item, Charm, Mask, and Blessed. Bonded Broken Diadem. Limit 1 mask per investigator. Reaction. When you reveal either a Bless or Curse token during a skill test, spend 1 offering and exhaust this card. Treat the revealed token as an Elder Sign token instead, returning it to the Chaos Bag. Then, if this card has no offerings, search your bonded cards for Broken Diadem and swap it with this card.
Interesting.
So you have to see Bless and Curse together in skill tests.
Yep.
3 times.
Yeah.
And that switches into Twilight Diadem, which then means for future Bless or Curse, it's a reaction, so you get to choose. You don't have to. You can spend offerings to turn them into Elder Sign instead. They don't get removed from the bag, so they go back in, but you basically get, if you flooded the bag with lots of Bless and Curse, which I imagine you've done if you want the Broken Diadem to turn into the Twilight Diadem, then you get this payoff of extra Elder Signs.
Yeah, yeah.
This is a classic card where we're going to start at the beginning and work our way through every single investigator's Elder Sign to see who wants this card.
A very slight tangent. Diadem is a word that I think I've only seen used by Lovecraft.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because he's always on about, like, the Shadow over Innsmouth has diadems coming out of the wazoo, I seem to remember. Because that's the relic that he finds, isn't it? It's like a golden diadem.
Oh, yeah.
And it's got all the fish men on it.
He's just very into it.
What do you think of this, then?
My memory is that Paradoxical Covenant, which had essentially the same triggering effect, people were found that the hardest of the covenants to pull off.
Yes. From my memory of Paradoxical Covenant, they would both trigger. off a test, right?
Mm-hmm. As in the Diadem and the Paradoxical Covenant would both trigger.
Yes.
Yeah.
You would put an offering on this, and then you would automatically pass the test.
Yeah. In the other order, actually. Paradoxical Covenant cares about when you've revealed the tokens.
Okay.
And this is after a skill test at your location ends, in which both of them were revealed. Sure. So, yeah. So, for all of those Paradoxical Covenant decks that are being so powerful, they've now got even more power with the Broken Diadem.
But have they, is the question I've got. Because
they're already auto-succeeding with the Paradoxical Covenant.
They already have a way to try and get a bless and a curse on a test.
Mm.
Do I need to automatically succeed?
Yeah.
Why do I need to
automatically succeed or to pull an Elder Sign?
Paradoxical Covenant lets you automatically succeed, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So what I'm saying is, when you reveal...
If you're already able to do that with your deck, why would you take the Broken Diadem? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
The Broken Diadem says every time you do that, you bank those successes, and then on future single tokens, it doesn't need to be both.
Yes.
You also got extra Elder Signs.
Yeah, that's fine.
And I was saying it as a joke, by the way, right, that powerful deck gets an extra boost.
No, I was taking your joke at face value and seeing if and examining it, because I think, is your Elder Sign ability so powerful that it supplants the need to... Well, let me start again. Is your Elder Sign effect so good that it trumps automatically succeeding at a test?
Mm.
Often drawing an Elder Sign is effectively succeeding at a test anyway.
Yeah, effectively, yeah.
And in fact, some people do have Elder Sign effects which allow them to automatically succeed at a test.
Mateo.
Preston, and weirdly.
Yep. if he's got the dollar, he's fine. The dollar.
He does, he's Preston. So my point is, if I'm in a situation where I've spent 4 XP on Paradoxical Covenant, is it?
2 XP.
Is it just 2? Because 1 it was exceptional. Okay, cool. So I've spent 2 XP.
It's just 2 permanent.
And I've put a permanent in my deck, and then I've probably built my deck around revealing both tokens.
Yeah.
At that point, when I draw one token, I can try and draw another token.
Yeah, and with your favours or whatever else.
Yeah, and I automatically succeed. Why do I need the Diadem?
This is a deliberate silence here. That's... it's win more. It's just more for that. I mean, maybe it's the same answer you gave about fine clothes and well dressed.
Hmm.
For those people who don't have Innsmouth and don't have the covenants.
Oh man, that's such a now you've used it against me. I realize how terrible that argument is. Doesn't stop this card from.
Yeah, weakling answer I'm going to give you, but you're going to shoot this down.
Yeah.
Is if you're already geared up towards fishing for tokens.
Mm-hmm.
Why not just keep that chain running even further? And say there's a situation where there are now no curses in the bag, because they've all been used up, all no blesses. You can still, once the Twilight Diadem is out, have Elder Signs for a little bit longer. And you're doing this in, say, maybe Jacqueline, maybe Mateo, probably a Mystic. So you've got these fishing effects. So you've also then got a fun Elder Sign effect that's worth triggering.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not saying it's good. I'm saying I can see why you would just... If you're going to the lengths of making Paradoxical Covenant work...
Yeah.
Maybe you just want the reward of... Now I basically can chain passing tests.
And
for days.
I would also say, I think if you're playing with someone like Mateo...
Mm.
Who is... He can trade his Elder Sign in for an extra action, right? Or a card and a resource.
Yeah. It's auto-succeed, and then, card and a resource, or get an extra action.
Yeah. So, I think, there is maybe a Mateo deck which does that, and then takes the Elder Sign, and then becomes incredibly efficient as a result. Mateo could flip this back and forward several times in a scenario, and have, six action turns.
Yeah. I mean, I've played Mateo solo on the cast, and I was doing Ancient Covenant... to just turn blesses into essentially auto-succeeds. So, draw a bless and just stop. And then also hoping to hit his Elder Sign effect a few times to also pull that sort of thing off. And just having, a really generous bag. The goal there would have been at some point probably to end up with Blessing of Isis as well. If you hit a couple of bless, you get an Elder Sign. It's it's all about hitting that Elder Sign with Mateo.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe there's some of that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a curious card, though.
Interesting. Okay, cool.
Very interesting.
Should we move on to...
Yeah. So that is the end of the player cards.
The end of the player cards. We do, sort of. We have four more player cards that become scenario cards after you draw them. They are, basically...
Although they're assets, so they do stay as player cards.
Oh, but, yeah, they are assets. Well, there we go.
Right. So you've got four basic weaknesses.
Four basic weaknesses. But they're very similar. So should we just alternately read them one after the other, and then we'll talk about them?
Yeah.
Okay, so first of all, we've got Maimed Hand, which is a blank cost asset, has the injury trait. You must put... the revelation effect is you must either put Maimed Hand into play in your threat area or take one damage and shuffle it into your deck. It cannot leave play except by the double action ability below, and it says you get minus one health. Double action, discard Maimed Hand, and it uses the hand slot.
Okay. So the option here is it comes in and it drops your health by one and takes a hand slot.
Yep.
And two actions to clear, or it's just a damage and it goes back in your deck. Okay. Next we have Back Injury, also a null cost asset, also a basic weakness injury. It has a revelation effect as well that is exactly the same. Put it into play or take a damage and shuffle it into your deck. It's also minus one health. It's double action to discard. This takes up the body slot and is amazing art.
Yeah,
very explicit back injury. Yeah.
Okay, then we've got the Silver Moth, which is the same, except it's an item and a relic. And then when this goes into your play area, in your threat area, you take a horror and shuffle it into your deck, and it's minus one sanity, and it uses the accessory slot.
Right. So it's a horror or losing sanity rather than damage and health. And then finally, we've got Vow of Drystelek, which, yeah, it's really cool. It's the art is a sort of a man holding a big book. This is pact traited, so you have to either put it into your threat area or take a horror and shuffle it into your deck. You get minus one sanity, double action to discard it, and it takes up the arcane slot. So, yeah, it seems like the penalty for all of these is either a repeatable chip on your horror or your damage, your health or your sanity, or the thing sitting in play reducing one of your two vitality stats, taking up a slot, and costing you two actions to discard.
I tried to look up Drystelek. Sorry. Drystelek. I can't find any reference to it anywhere except as this card.
Unless it's a typo and it's actually Dr. Z. Etelek. Dr. Z. Y. Telek. Yeah. PhD.
What do you make of these cards then, Frank?
I like the design, actually. I think they're sweet design.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked before about basic weaknesses that represent you losing an ability to do a thing, and I think that's summed up really nicely by the Maimed Hand taking up a hand slot.
Yeah,
it's like your hand is maimed, so you can't hold anything in that hand.
Yeah.
The other thing that strikes me about them is, depending on the deck, these could be killer or they could be not too problematic.
Yes.
So Back Injury and the Vow, if you've not got anything in your body slot or you're not slinging spells, you maybe don't care.
Yeah, I did think this, Frank. I think what's nice is that they impact the
vitality as well, right?
Yeah,
but health or sanity.
But probably the opposite of the way. so the two, probably the losing a hand slot is bad, losing an arcane slot is bad, but quite specific.
Mm.
But if like Amina loses a hand slot, she's down to four health. And if Roland uses an arcane slot, he's down to four sanity.
Yeah.
So there's a nice, like, it hits a rough slot. If it doesn't hit their slot, it hits them in their health pool, is what I'm trying to get
at. Yeah. You know, if say, Daryl takes the Vow of Drystelek, he doesn't care about his sanity going down, and he probably doesn't have anything in his arcane slots.
Yeah.
So there are possible, you know, say Wendy as well. Maybe it's just survivors are really robust and don't care. So there are possible decks out there that don't mind. I think similarly with the back injury.
Oh, except the body slot,
I'd say. Calvin's like, no!
Don't mind the hand slot. But losing its health for sanity is bad for him.
Yeah, it's just immediately eliminated. So I think that's really nice. I think the other like cool element there to pick up on that theme, say you're Zoe with a maimed hand and your hands are full, maybe you do accept taking damage from this a couple of times,
mm-hmm.
because the alternative is losing that card you've put in a hand slot. You really can't afford to do it. Of course, if you take damage from it a couple of times, you could end up in a situation where when you draw this, if it comes into play, it eliminates you. And if you take the damage, it eliminates you.
Yeah.
Like, you could just be, these could just knock you out. They're a little bit like, we've been playing Innsmouth in Think on Your Feet, they're a little bit like Innsmouth Look, which reduces your sanity pool, and Dream of Rillier,
right,
which is minus one willpower and minus one sanity. That card is relatively nasty, but it's particularly nasty when you're already at low sanity and you could just draw it and it just goes in your threat area and kills you straight away. And these could all do that as well. You could be like, oh, I've just passed the treachery. I've got one sanity left. I'm going to be okay. And then in upkeep, you draw the Silver Moth and you're like, oh, crap. You can play around that, obviously. Once you know these weaknesses, you play around it. But that's nice, right? Being forced to interact with your weaknesses is nice, rather than rolling your eyes and moving on. Yeah, that's all I have to say. Anything else you want to add?
I don't think so. I think it's interesting, like, that I sometimes think weaknesses which can be terrible or not bad are a bit, feels bad if you draw them, but they feel a lot better balanced than, say, what's it called, dendromorphosis.
Just lose both hands.
Yeah, and which is brutal. Or straitjacket. Yeah. That's a scenario specific weakness, but they just feel terrible if you get hit by them.
Mm-hmm.
This feels still annoying, but you can play around it a bit better, a bit more easily.
Yeah, you could even if you wanted to play around it as you upgrade by changing your deck to respond to these issues.
Yeah,
you know, particularly say, if you're running a deck where you don't have things you're desperately putting in your hands, maybe you're a Mystic, maybe you're like, all right, okay, well, I'll just make sure I don't upgrade into things that I really want to fill my hands with. And I like that. I like that you might respond to your weakness rather than just carry on blithely. I think some people would hate that because it feels like their deck is being warped. But personally, I think that's fine. The Silver Moth art is really good as well.
I haven't got anything else to add. What's your favourite
card? Well, we were going to have a short episode, yeah. Dawn Star, for me.
Yeah, I don't see any choice but that, really.
I'm going to join you. That got us excited, didn't it? Yeah. Follow the Dawn Star.
I wouldn't often consider a sort of a mitigate-y card like that, that cost an XP, I think.
Mm.
It just does it for me. It's a shame it's not a spell. It'd be nice if it was, really nice if it was a spell. But you can't have everything, can you, Frank?
You can't, no. Hey, you know who we haven't mentioned when we're talking about all picking the right tokens is Kahaku.
Yeah.
I'm just going to throw that in right here. Yeah, it's kind of a given, right?
It's kind of in my mind, yeah.
Does Kahaku want a like paradoxical covenant broken diadem? That's for us to find out another day. So, listener, we'll probably have a bit of a break now before we get to the XP cards, mainly to give us a chance to play with some of them and look at them and think about them. But we will be talking about every single card to a greater or lesser extent. And yeah, you can get in touch with us. We're drawntotheflamepodcast@gmail.com. And then we're around the place that's Drawn to the Flame. We're also on Patreon. If you're not yet a patron, why not become a patron of the cast and come and chat to us on our wonderful Discord? Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you.